is the CB Sports Network Rewind Show here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. We've got Jeff Blankman, Mason Nealon, and myself, Casey Miners, in studio with us. And we've got a very interesting show today. I think that a lot of the viewers and listeners are going to be interested in. And we're going to speak with a couple ADs. We got Sean Burks on the phone with us, waiting for his chance to get on and talk. But also we'll speak with Randy Beeson today. We're going to be talking about 8th graders getting the chance to play varsity sports. So I think it's going to be a really interesting show today.
Yeah, and Mason, I know we've all kind of covered it a little bit with softball and baseball yep. over the years. But I think you said when you were in South Dakota that they that 8th graders played the yep. other sports up there, so you're kind of knowledgeable a little bit yep. on how that works. But yep. Let's bring Sean on with us right now. Sean Burks, again, the AD down at the Audubon Wheeler. Sean, good morning, and good to see you.
The league-leading Carroll Merchants will host the Joplin Jailbirds Tuesday, July 14th at Historic Merchants Park with the first pitch at 6:30. Tuesday's game is sponsored by Sparky's. The Carroll Merchants have 3 home games.
A shake, enjoying a famous root beer, or biting into a fresh burger will help you spend less time waiting and more time making summer memories. A&W Jefferson, easy, fresh, and always worth a stop.
One day, I'll teach chemistry to kids.
I'm going to be an architect.
My dream is to be a chef.
This is a world of possibilities. A world in which people who put their minds to something can really make a difference.
My goal is to help the environment.
Someday, I'll find a cure for cancer.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we believe that aspiring minds can achieve anything. So we dedicate ourselves to making sure everyone has an opportunity to go to college. Each year, we provide more than $150 billion in grants, loans, and work-study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college.
I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
We apologize about that, folks. We are now joined again with Sean Burks of the Audubon Wheelers, head athletic director down there in Audubon. And Sean, how's it going today?
Well, better now that I got back on the line with you. I don't know what happened there. Suddenly my call failed and I panicked. So I'm back. I'm ready to go. And we're headed to Adventureland on this nice, cool July morning. So we'll see how hot we get, how fast, but it'll be fun.
Well, Sean, we panicked too when we intro'd you and you weren't there, so.
Mutual.
Hey, first of all, I know Casey said he wanted to do this, but we all three want to congratulate you and everybody involved with the Exiro-Kern-Gimbledon-Audubon softball team. Second trip to the state tournament here in the last 3 years as the girls clinched it last night. So congratulations to everybody in that big family.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's been really cool to see the teams come together and the communities come together. You know, our fan support for softball has been tremendous, just like it was during girls basketball. And it's always cool to see those things pay off. It's not always wins and losses, but that's the easiest one to see. But, you know, when you look at the roster and you see that about half the starters on both those teams from this team this year that made it to state or from each community that, you know, if they were on their own, probably wouldn't have had those successes, but coming together allowed for that. And it's just really cool and really fun to celebrate this time. And I know the girls are hungry to go, win a few more next week and hopefully bring home some big hardware.
I can't imagine how big the crowd's going to be that you guys are going to take up. I remember how huge the crowds were 2 years ago. I have a feeling it might be as big or bigger this year.
Yeah. I think when you've got that number one next to your name and a lot of expectations and a lot of excitement and a lot of support as well. And so, yeah, it'll be fun to see, you know, Monday at noon and how many people can get there. And I'm sure it'll be plenty.
Yeah, again, we're excited to get up there on Monday. And Sean, we'll talk about what we brought you in for today. And it's a pretty big ruling. As I mentioned, we're going to talk with you and then Randy Beeson later on throughout the show. But 8th graders now getting to play at a varsity level. So when I was in South Dakota covering, they allowed kids in the 8th grade level to be able to play varsity sports. And then the same thing, I think, in Minnesota. You know, how's it been for you guys trying to navigate this and kind of what's been your thoughts as one of the smaller schools, you know, around the state to kind of navigate this new landscape we see of sports coming up in the fall?
Yeah, I think the number one thing for us was just the really short timeline of, it was pushed into legislation. And then we kind of sat for a while waiting for some rules. and then all of a sudden, you know, the emergency rules get dropped, you know, less than 6 weeks from the start of fall sports. So kind of caused a little bit of panic there, but, you know, I've been working with Mr. Miller, our superintendent, you know, to get some policies in place to present to our board, and, you know, next week we'll take that to the board for action. But I think what we've kind of settled on is pending board approval in Audubon is, you know, we want it to be, you know, situation by situation, case by case. We don't want a blanket statement that, you know, eighth graders will never play in Audubon or eighth graders will always play in Audubon or whatever. We want it to be a case by case. And that case could be, you know, a really talented individual that's ready to go. It could be, you know, a number situation. There's different things that arise, and that leaves our door open to allow that. But we're also hoping at the same time, you know, as long as our numbers continue where they're at, you know, unless it's all of a sudden we start getting an influx of Division I athletes in Audubon, which is probably not super likely, that we probably won't see a lot of change, to be honest.
Sean, do you think in talking, like I know you do with the guys, you know, in Des Moines and even in Boone for the boys, is this change to try and help the numbers, especially for the smaller schools? Or what do you think the reasoning why is that the state said, you know, now's the time that besides baseball and softball, eighth graders are now going to be eligible for all of the other sports?
Yeah, you know, I think the first and foremost, the Girls Union and the Boys Association both came out and said this did not come from them. You know, it came from legislation, which, you know, seems to be overreaching at times. This is one of those of, you know, that they both said, you know, both in Boone and West Des Moines, that they'd make the best of it. They'd help make some guidance. But it wasn't anything that they were seeking. But now that it's been handed down, it's Iowa Coats. We have to react to that and make some rulings on that and make some guidance. What it seems to be is people think that it's going to help the participation issue is my guess. Some small schools, but that concerns me too, because if you're calling up your eighth graders to keep your high school football program or your high school girls basketball program or whatever sport it is, most of those scenarios, if you're calling up your eighth grade, is probably killing your junior high program. And if you're killing your junior high program, it's probably a matter of time there that you don't have a varsity program anyway. So I think it's a little bit, when people think it's going to solve the participation question, if we're not bringing sixth grade up to junior high and making high school 8-12, I don't think you can have, in small schools, you can't just have seventh grade be junior high and 8-12 be high school, because you're going to get some years where you don't have very many seventh graders. So that the participation thing to me is not a super strong argument. To me, I think it's more of the really talented individuals that aren't being challenged by eighth grade and can help a varsity win. And you look at Madden Greenway in Minnesota that scored 5,000 points. She'd scored 1,000 points before she got to high school. Like, that's an example of a girl that needed to be playing high school ball at that time. So in my mind, I think it's more for that, and we probably won't see a ton of changes. But with the way it's ruled, I think some schools, you know, with some leadership could decide to use that for participation. And it does worry me a little bit that there could be some short-sighted of, we want to save our program, we want to save our school, we want to save whatever it is, and you end up causing more damage because you kill off your feeder program in the junior high.
Sean, do you think this puts a little emphasis on the coaches a little bit too, to know, you know, what they have coming up, you know, if a kid's ready or not, to really, you know, hone in on the programs and know what they have on the way up?
100%. I think that's a concern because not all sports start at the same time. You know, I'll use basketball as an example. You know, our junior high boys basketball will start playing games in the middle of November before the high school does. And sometimes, you know, I'll years that we have a really good football run, you know, there's junior high games during our playoff run or during the championship week sometimes. So some of our kids haven't even practiced at the high school level. We haven't had any boys basketball practices. But the way the rule reads is if a kid starts the season on that program, they can't be called up or sent down, so to speak. So, you know, what's Darren Miller going to do in Audubon if he has a really good eighth grader and it's November 15th and it's time for the first junior high game and they haven't had any or many high school practices? Because if you call the kid up and it's not the right level for him, you can't send him back down. So I think there's that is definitely an issue of mine. Not that we want to send kids back and forth or have kids playing 60 basketball games and playing at three levels and running around like crazy. But I feel like that was one of the things that was a little bit short-sighted on, once they're on the roster, they're on the roster.
And Sean, you've obviously built a successful football program over the last couple of years here. So do you feel like it depends on the sport as well, knowing that, you know, maybe it might be easier for some of the kids to maybe do tennis or golf, some of the stuff where you're not hitting maybe instead of like a football?
Yeah, and I know I sound a little negative this morning, which I don't like, but there's definitely some positives that come of it. You know, I'll use our spring sports, for example. Right now in junior high, the only spring option is track and field. Where in high school, they have the option of track and field, tennis, or golf. So our eighth grade golfers and tennis players can get a head start on those sports. And I know, you know, those are two sports that, you know, a lot of times kids come in as freshmen and haven't played a whole lot. So getting another year under their belt to get introduced to tennis and golf, I think, can go a long way for us. And then a lot of the other sports, you know, the wrestling is weight classes. You know, there's, you know, track and cross country are non-contact sports. There's a lot of examples of that, that, you know, if the kid's ready, you know, I think that's the reason, the positive of it. If you have a really talented eighth grader that can go up, and most sports you're probably fine. And obviously the football coach in me still comes back, and our football, the IFCA board of directors that I'm on, and one of the comments that came up that has stuck with me that I've used over and over since then is there are non-contact sports, there are contact sports, but football is a collision sport. And most of these eighth graders that are, if you're calling up an eighth grader to play on a team that's trying to save participation numbers, are probably small schools, they're probably skill players, and they're probably not on very good teams. And you get a junior, a senior linebacker, defensive end, someone that cuts that kid in half, you know, the risk for injury seems a little higher than normal. And
yep.
Then that kid, the other thing that goes with it, the kid doesn't have a positive experience. And then those kids that are being pushed out there too early are not going to come back, and you're going to end up causing a bigger problem with more kids not coming out, and then you're definitely not going to have a program. So I think, obviously, football is the number one concern. There's ones that are non-contact that if a kid's ready, let them go. There's sports that if you don't have at the junior high level, let's green light them. But, yeah, not all sports are created equally as far as this one goes either.
Sean, you mentioned that, you know, the not being able to go back up and down once you're on a roster, you're on a roster. Now that this law's been passed, do you feel like schools have been maybe reaching out? Do you think it'll help to talk to, you know, the lawmakers out there that decided to kind of shove this down your guys' throat and kind of, you know, maybe wake them up a little bit? And I'll be the one that'll be a little hard on them so you don't have to, but maybe wake them up a little bit that, you know, that is something that they need to review and maybe change sometime down the road.
I think the good news with all of this is they have stated that these are emergency rules. And the full set of, you know, of rules, whatever they're going to call those, the real rules, I don't know. I don't remember. But these are just temporary emergency rules to get through year one. So I do think there is some room, and I'm hoping those conversations are open between legislators and the athletic association and the girls' union so that next spring or whenever they're sitting down to get those ready for the following school year, maybe there are some revisions in place, you know, for the example of, let's use basketball, like I said, with coming up or going down, you know, maybe there's a, you know, maybe you just put a game limit. You know, the kids can only play in whatever that number of games, or if it's a different sport, maybe it's quarters, maybe it's matches, maybe it's whatever it is, you know, races in the spring or whatever it might be. But I think that would be a little bit, I mean, there's a little bit more, you know, maybe paperwork that goes with maybe recording all of these things. But if a team really wants to evaluate where the kid is at, and play it safe and leave them at the junior high, and then they find out they are the star, and then they catch heck for not calling them up. And then the flip side of it is you call them up too soon, they're not ready, they ride the bench, now they lost a year of development, and it's just kind of that black eye of, we thought you were ready and you're not. So I just, there's a lot that goes into that. There's the, even the psychological piece and the peer thing of, you call an eighth grader up to varsity, you know there's going to be comments in during eighth grade, you know, in the hallways and in the classrooms of, you know, oh, the varsity kid's here, or, oh, you're too good for us now, or, you know, just some of that stuff that is likely to happen that we don't want to happen. But so if you're going to do this, you have to make sure it's the right decision. And I don't know that we have all the information to make all great decisions right now based on the timeline that's in place with the roster on the opening day type of situation.
Sean, I got a little bit of a two-part question for you here. You know, with other states, you mentioned Madden Greenway up in Minnesota. You know, I got to throw a shout-out to the Iowa Hawkeyes, daughter of former Iowa linebacker legend Chad Greenway. But have you, you know, seen what other states have done to kind of model what you guys want to do, you know, at Audubon? And then, you know, Do you think that it also, you know, puts a little bit of pressure on the coaches to kind of, in a way, know, you know, kind of feeling this out in a way, like there might be some bumps up along the road, especially through that first season?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that and when we had our joint Zoom with Tom and Aaron, the heads of the association and union, they were very honest of like, hey, just try to go a little bit at a time, understand and be very transparent up front that there's going to be issues made because there's not all information is out there yet and we're going to kind of build it as we fly it. But at the same time, you know, we haven't reached out to other states because we know what our guidance says and we know what we have to follow and we're going to trust that our state leaders are giving us what they have and Tom and Aaron are awesome at what they do. So I think that for us, I think when we said, the first thing for us was we wanted to make sure we've got something in place. Our board policy, as long as it's approved next week, is going to be some sort of process. It starts with the coach, but then it goes, the coach requests a meeting with the AD. If the coach and the AD have a set of checklists, you know, are they physically ready? Are they maturely, are they ready? Does it cause issues with numbers on the team they're leaving? Is there a reason, you know, I've got a whole checklist of things to discuss and then have that meeting with the family to have them officially sign off. Because even if the coach wants a kid up, if the family's not ready, and when it's all said and done, you need the family to be fully bought in as well. And the flip side is we don't want families, everyone requesting for their kid to get bumped up and think that their kid is ready. We really want this to be, there's from the outside, you really can't tell that there was a change. And those random situations, those dynamic athletes that come along, those 1 in 1,000 kids, I think everyone would understand why that kid's getting bumped up. And if it's a participation thing where you have a crazy number of junior high and a small number of JV one year where it makes sense to take a bunch of eighth graders up just to make sure you have all three levels, then that's a unique situation that you address with that team that year.
Sean, sounds like you've had some conversations with your coaches down there. I know you have, but what were those conversations like and that checklist that you have? Was that kind of developed with your coaches?
Yeah, you know, as of right now, the conversations have been set with Mr. Miller and myself of going through some documents from some other people and kind of tailoring it to fit us. That's where I'm at right now. And then, you know, I've reached out via email to my coaches because it's summer, so I've kind of sent them some updates on the guidance and some updates. Once the board policy's in, I'll email them again. But I've, you know, tennis and volleyball and football have been the first three, so I've had a little more conversations with Molly and Kenzie as they're heading into their season. And then, in August, I always have my preseason coaches meeting with all my coaches during the week before school starts to get in front of everyone. So I'm hopeful that we'll have a little bit more information. We'll know what the board policy is. We can address some of those things, but there's going to be some random concerns, that we're not thinking about yet, or things that maybe impact wrestling that don't impact basketball, or things that impact volleyball that maybe not impact softball, or whatever it is that as we get through some of these sports and have to address them. But I think everyone knows we're human and we're going to try the best we can to be as successful as we can, but understand that the mistakes could be made, but we want to try to limit those if we can. But once again, there could be some issues year one of implementing.
Have you been able to find all the time to do all of this and also do all the AD jobs, especially with the success of that softball program that you guys have this year?
Yeah, you know, there's been a few more hours in the school, in the office there for a stretch there when it came out. But, you know, luckily for me, I'll give Mr. Miller a ton of credit. He's a superintendent that's on the board of directors. So he's had some communication with Tom and Aaron and some of those guys. He was able to reach out and get some resources. He and I, you know, have a really good working relationship. So you know, we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel. It was more of get what other people are doing and other states were doing and then some other things and then make it fit what we're doing. And then, next week we'll have a conversation with our board to see, you know, what they're thinking and go from there. But I think the thing that comes with that of allowing all the local control is we're hopeful that, you know, we don't have 10 different, wildly different policies across the 10 schools in the Rolling Valley. You know, we don't want to show up for the first week of junior high volleyball and a bunch of schools tell us that eighth graders are playing JV and our eighth graders, we have a bunch out that don't, you know, now aren't going to play as much. I don't think that's going to happen, but when you give that much local control and all these people have to panic and implement within 5 or 6 weeks, you know, what their board is like, what their AD is doing, what their superintendent is like. All those things vary district to district, so you could have some differing things. So that's another concern as well.
Sean, I've got one last question. I don't know if Casey or Mason have anything left, but I don't want to make you guys go too far on this, but I know there's some discussions on the continued sharing and maybe more sharing and stuff with Exirocrine Kimbolton. Have you guys kind of, with Trevor being the superintendent in both, are these discussions kind of involving what could happen if you guys do combine in more sports here in the near future?
Yeah, they've got a board meeting tonight at Exire HK where I think they're gonna discuss and maybe take some action on sharing a few more boys things. You know, you looked at what they had for boys sports last year. You know, boys basketball, they were really down in numbers. I don't think they played much, if any, JV. You know, boys baseball this summer. You know, I think they finished the season with 11 kids and didn't play any JV. So I think they didn't have a lot of success, wins and losses. But I think it's more than that. They're not able to have a JV program anymore. You've got freshmen that are underclassmen that are being, you know, they have to play varsity just to fill out the roster. So I think, you know, allowing them to come with us in basketball, baseball, track, I think are the three being discussed tonight, where they wouldn't bump us to 2A, that allow the kids at both schools to play at the right levels. And you've seen from the sports that we have shared the success story. You know, we were talking last night after the softball game that, you know, of the last three seasons of girls basketball and of softball, all six of those seasons have ended with a regional final. Three of them have been victorious in advance of the state tournament. But not to let people think that that's magically going to happen in everything. Those have been great success stories, but it also shows what can happen when the two communities come together. And if you watch the girls on those teams come together and work together, you can't tell that the outfielders are from Audubon right now and most of the infielders are from Exire HK. You can't tell that the pitcher and the catcher don't go to school together right now. You can't tell on the basketball court which kids were playing or going to school where. And I think that's really cool. And I think that, you know, just based on their numbers, where they're high in girls, we're low in girls, it's worked. And now where we're high in boys and they're low in boys, it'll work. So I think as we keep moving forward, there's going to be more discussions that go on. You know, at some point, if the sharing goes on for longer and longer, you start thinking about maybe some alternate names and some alternate mascots and some alternate colors for those sports that are together. So you don't end up with hyphenated and wondering which mascot is which some years. But at the end of the day, those are minor details. The biggest thing is making sure that we're doing what's best for kids. And you've seen some of the success stories that go with it. And we'll continue to evolve and adjust and figure out what needs to happen. And our board has been really open to, we're here to help and we're here to share when it needs to, do what's best for both schools. And, you know, we're not combining schools. We're not closing schools. It's really just about athletic participation. And we needed them for some girls things big time, or we wouldn't have softball and basketball right now, for example. And they look like they're needing us for basketball and baseball, and we're here to help them out as well.
Well, Sean, I want to thank you for joining us. I know it's been a hard, thing to navigate throughout this off season, but thank you for joining us and letting us know kind of, you know, how you guys are navigating everything.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys giving me a call and letting me have some insight into it. And hopefully it, you know, allows people to understand a little bit of what we're going through, and we'll see what it comes. Obviously, in the fall and the winter, we'll look back and find some things that maybe we shouldn't have done and make some changes, but that's life, right? We'll figure out what needs to be improved on the next go around, and hopefully when those emergency rules expire and the next rules come in, maybe there's a few adjustments that make a little bit more sense as well.
Yeah, Sean, thank you so much and for joining us. We'll step away. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk with Randy Beeson of Carroll about how Carroll's managing all of this 8th grade stuff when we come back here on the Rewind Show.
As a professional in your field, have you ever wanted to give back to your community? CTE stands for Career and Technical Education. Career and Technical Educators are professionals who teach the next generation of students going into these fields. CTEs are important because they help shape the future workforce. CTE not only benefits the student learning the program, but the teacher who teaches it.
CTE has impacted me personally because, one, I'm a product of CTE. I was a student in these classes when I was in high school. But also, as a teacher, I get to build these relationships with students. And it's not just subject matter. It's a potential career. It's a potential passion. And you get to work with students and see them going on to careers in this field. I get to work with students in the most unique setting, a setting that's technical, creative, and hands-on. And I think when you bring teachers and students together like that, you get to see a different side of their potential. There is nothing more exciting than that.
If this seems like something you'd be interested in, go to acteonline.org and search for Teach CTE.
We welcome you back to 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. It's the CB Sports Network Rewind Show. Casey Miners, Jeff Blankman, Mason Nealon with you guys. And we've already talked to one athletic director. We got another one on the phone that's with us right now as well. And Randy Beeson of the Carroll Tigers getting his input compared to a larger school that we see with this new rule with the 8th graders now getting to play varsity. And Randy, I want to thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
Coach, Jeff Blankman here. I know you guys just recently had this discussion. The school board hasn't voted on it. It sounds like that's coming up. But as you heard the rumors that, you know, they may pass this and move this direction at the state level, what were some of the early conversations like at Carroll? Or did you guys not really start to do much about it until it actually moved forward at the state level?
Yeah, I felt like it was kind of strange how it, you know, became a law and got put in there. You know, there was talk about the calendar days and how many days they have to sit out and the transfer rule and all that, and then all of a sudden there was the amendment to it of, oh yeah, and by the way, 8th graders are going to be able to participate in high school activities. So we were trying to decide early on, like, are they adding that because they want the bill to get wiped out, like they don't like it, or are they adding that because they're trying to sneak that in there because they do think it'll get approved for the 140 calendar days. So you know, a lot of talk, but just conversation. So then once it actually got passed, it was like, whoa, this is actually happening. So what's the guidance that they're going to give us next? Like, is it going to be they're telling us exactly how it's going to work, or is it going to be local control? So as you know, we found out that every school district gets to decide how they want to do it and how they want to handle it. So, yeah, a lot of conversations with the other ADs on, you know, what they're thinking and what they're doing, and you know, a lot of mixed responses too. So you know, I think for some of the smaller schools it gives more opportunities to fill rosters and things like that. For us, we have pretty good participation numbers for most of our sports. Some of the newer sports that we're starting with, cross country and tennis, you know, would it help that out and getting more kids out and getting more numbers? Possibly. You know, some of the other sports that we don't have great numbers in, like girls bowling, something like that, would that help some of those sports? That's a possibility too. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's still a mixed review out there, and I think there's a lot of things that we're going to have to work through and the different things that are going to pop up throughout the school year that maybe we'll look back the following year and be like, man, I don't think we handled it well, or man, that went really well. We're in a pretty good position. So I think there's going to be a lot of learning going on for sure.
Randy, I know that we talked a little bit before we got started too. It sounds like you guys are going to put a lot of emphasis, if this is something Carroll decides to do, on the coaches, you know, just because you feel like the coaches will know the players the best.
Yeah, I think so. You know, when we hire coaches, one of the questions we always ask is, you know, the head coach is responsible for the 7-12 program. So you being the person, being the head coach, you're in charge of all those levels and making sure that you oversee all that stuff. So I feel like coaches have a good idea of who's coming up and in their program and what they've done. You know, another big question that we ask is, how are we going to build the youth program? So that's 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, you know. So we shouldn't have head coaches that don't know who's coming up in all those grades. I feel like our coaches do a really good job of having a good understanding of what's down there and working with the youth. So, you know, if you have a move-in or something at the 7th or 8th grade level and it's someone new, that might be a little bit different. But I feel like our coaches do a good job working with the youth and having a good idea. So there shouldn't be very many surprises. But, again, there's always the questions of, man, they're pretty good at the 7th and 8th grade level. How would that look like at the freshman JV varsity level? You know, and the big topic is, are you bringing kids up if they're not going to be able to help you at the varsity level? You know, I think that's the conversation with a lot of schools is, you know, keep them in 8th grade and let them participate with their team and be with their friends and their classmates and don't bring them up unless you really think they can help you at the varsity level. So, and I see both sides to that. I think some coaches are like, man, they can help me out here in the next couple of years. They should be up with us and learning what we're doing as soon as possible. And others saying, you know, if they can't help us out right away at the varsity level, keep them with their class and their team there and you know, bring them up all together at the same time. So I think you probably have some mixed reviews out there, and I think it's different for every school, which is probably why the state decided to let every school kind of decide what they think is best for themselves.
Randy, one of the discussions I'm assuming you guys had was the impact that this could have on the 7th, 8th grade levels, especially 8th grade for you guys. Some schools have to play 7th and 8th grade together, but if schools are moving kids off the 8th grade level, from what I understood from you and in the law, that once they're on a varsity or a freshman or a JV roster, they can't go back down.
Yeah, I mean, that's the guidance that we got is, I mean, once you get rostered, you're technically on that team. So if you think, man, I'm going to bring this eighth grader up and they're going to play with our JV or freshman team, or we're going to have them practice with us and we'll be good to go, and then they start the year and play in a game at the high school level, technically they're on that level for the rest of the year. So you find out after a couple of games, like, man, I didn't make a very good decision. They're not ready for this. There's no going back once you roster them, and especially once they've played in a high school game, they're technically at that level. So you don't want to waste a year, you know. So if you're bringing someone up and you're not quite sure, and they play, and you find out after a couple of games they're not quite ready, like, you're going to have to figure out how to get them ready and keep getting them better, because you can't send them back down to the junior high level. In the same way, if the junior high season starts early, like for split seasons or something, and it starts before the high school season, and they play in a junior high game, you're like, whoa, he's really good, we should move him up to the high school level. Like, you can't do that either. So, I mean, it makes it tough. And, you know, you're going to have a lot of communication with parents. You're going to have some tough conversations, and again, you're trusting the coaches and administration. Obviously, me being the AD, I'll be a part of a lot of those conversations of, you know, give us the pros and cons of why you think they should be playing up and how's that going to affect their kid. And you know, there's a lot of things too that eighth graders maturity level, you know, with some seniors in high school maturity level, you know, you got to get the team chemistry and you got to get kids to get along and all be a part of the same thing. So there's a lot of things that go into this. And again, I think at smaller levels, if you need numbers, you need numbers, right? And, you know, we talked a little bit before too, just because we can't field a freshman girls basketball team doesn't mean we're moving our whole eighth grade team up and they're going to become our freshman girls basketball team. You know, I don't think that makes sense either. So there's going to be a lot of different things that we'll work through and have conversations. And, you know, if the kids are good enough, I guess, at that level, and they can help us out at the varsity level, now that the law says you can, I think we'd be silly not to take advantage of that. But again, it's going to be on a sport-to-sport and individual basis of what we think makes sense for that team. So, you know, if you have a fast eighth grader that can beat some of your juniors and seniors on the track team, like, I'm pretty sure we'd take advantage of that and move them up and let them be a part of that, right?
Yep.
We have low numbers on a team, and we need to fill a boys tennis team or something, we have some eighth graders that we think can help us do that, I think we'd be silly not to take advantage of that. You know, wrestling, it's weight classes. So, again, if you have an eighth grader that has done a lot of wrestling moving into the season and has done the youth wrestling, and it's a need that we have at 100 something, some of the smaller weight class, and we have someone that could fill us in, I think our coaches would do that. But our coaches also said we're never going to put a kid in a position where they're going to get hurt and they're not ready for that, right? Like, you can't put a eighth grader that's not ready to compete in a small weight class up against a senior who's been a state qualifier for 3 years in a row, right? That doesn't make sense. And, you know, we talked about football. Not very often, I think, at our level, are you going to get an eighth grader that's big enough and strong enough that's going to be able to go out there and compete at the varsity level for football without getting hurt. So there's going to be a lot of conversations. We're definitely going to make sure that we're being safe with all this. You know, we want to be competitive. We want to win, but we're not going to put kids in a position where they're going to get hurt or put them in a position where they're not developing the right way and it's not what's best for them and for the team. So, but obviously, if the law says you can, we'll take advantage of that as much as we can if it makes sense for the situation.
Randy, is there going to be some, you know, learning curves for the coaches and even administration early on when this, you know, process does fully go through when they start the school year over of seeing, you know, who can we do, and that's like a learning curve process of that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a big webinar last week, maybe a couple weeks ago, where, you know, both the Boys Association and the Girls Union, the executive directors were on there, you know, giving advice and letting us know what we should do and how it should work and what it should look like. And their advice was to start small, right? Like, you don't need to jump into it and just open it all up, whatever. But again, I mean, it depends on each school. And I would like to say that all of our coaches always make the right decisions, and as an AD, I'm always making right decisions, but that's not always the case, right? We're always learning and trying to be better and trying to figure out what makes sense and what works and what doesn't work. So, there's definitely going to be a learning curve, and we're going to have to learn from every situation that we have as, you know, what's worked and what doesn't work. And, you know, if a coach brings up three kids and it doesn't work out, I think he's going to learn real quick for the following year, like, man, maybe that's not the best thing. You know, it didn't go well for us in this year. Like, why didn't it go well? And, you know, as a coach, you're always evaluating everything that you do, right? There's a lot of second guessing and all that stuff. But, I mean, this will be the same way. You're trying to do what's best for your program. It's not always just about the varsity team. It's not just about varsity JV and freshmen now, you know. And like I said, our coaches know that when you become a head coach of a high school program, you're overseeing the big picture. So how can you make sure that you're continuing to develop kids and put them in the right situation to be prepared to play at the highest level? And you're hoping you're making all the right decisions as you go, but now all of a sudden there's a little more pressure of, man, if you have kids ready, are they really ready for the highest level, you know, a year earlier? A lot of the conversation early on was, well, the eighth graders will just move up, and then that means sixth and seventh graders are now your new seventh and eighth graders. And the state said right away, like, that's not the case at all. There is no... The sixth and seventh graders do not become the new junior high. It's still seventh and eighth graders. You're just giving that opportunity to the eighth graders to play up on the higher level. So definitely going to be a lot of questions, definitely going to be a learning curve. You know, a lot of conversations with parents and coaches and administration to make sure that we're all on the same page and we want what's best for your kid, and we'll make those decisions accordingly.
For you, I know you're also a coach in this aspect as well. So what is it going to take, in your opinion, you know, to evaluate talent? Because I know being in the high school, you get to see the freshmen through seniors throughout the year. But what does it take now to be able to evaluate maybe some of the seventh graders and the eighth graders to see if they are possibly ready to play?
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, right? Like, you know, I was talking to another AD and they were talking about a volleyball girl and wanting to be, you know, moved up, and you know, well, then you need to be going to the high school open gyms. You need to be a part of that stuff, you know, and you're going to have a tryout ahead of time, you know. So, like, there's a lot of things going on that a lot of ADs and coaches are going to have to try to figure out. Again, I think the stress that we put on, or we stress at Carroll, is like, hey, you need to be involved in all the levels, you know. So, for example, for basketball, we have a junior high kind of open gym where kids can come in and do things. We have a youth program that they're playing a lot of basketball together. So, like, you feel like you have a pretty good idea of who's coming up in your programs, and I think our coaches do a good job in a lot of our sports as far as knowing and being aware of what's coming up and giving opportunities to see those kids, and so you have an idea. But yeah, I think we'll have some parents that are telling us that their kids are good enough to be on the team and they should be on there, and those will be the some conversations that we'll have to have with coaches. So to me, it's just you're going as a head coach, you're going to have to be more aware of the junior high level and have more opportunities for maybe some of those kids to go against some of the high school kids to kind of see where they're at and what they can do, and to give you a better idea of what it makes sense for them to be playing up and what should that look like.
Do you think, Randy, it puts more of an emphasis on practice and getting to practice to see what those kids can do in a way to know if they are ready?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to me, it's the out-of-season stuff, right? Like, yep. You know, I'm thinking of the basketball team, right? Like, there's open gyms in the summertime, and if none of those eighth graders are showing up for those, then all of a sudden you don't have that good of an idea of what they can do, right? So it's definitely those extra opportunities that coaches are allowing for kids to come in and do some things. And, I mean, if you're an eighth grader that's not coming to those extra opportunities, it'd be really hard, I think, as a head coach to be like, yeah, I think they're ready. Like, you know, but some of those kids, most of the kids that are showing up to those are the kids that are your dedicated ones that have been doing stuff, you know, and putting in the extra time. So, I mean, most coaches know who those kids are and if they're ready and what they can do. To me, it's the big area of, like, have those kids gone against juniors and seniors in high school, right? Like, you've seen the 7th and 8th graders play against each other. You've seen maybe the 8th graders and freshmen do some things together, but, you know, probably not very often are the 8th graders playing with the seniors or the juniors or something like that. So, yeah, getting them in a gym together, getting them together where you can see them practicing together and working out together is going to be really important.
Randy, one last thing for you, because I know you're busy. As best as you can tell us, I know you guys are going to be talking about it at the school board meeting coming up. What are you guys going to be asking them to vote on, as best as you can tell us without probably giving too much away?
Yeah, I mean, there's no secrets. I mean, it's a law, so I mean, the plan is going to be to open it up to eighth graders, and we'll have to put a plan in place of what we think is the best way to go about that, and to make sure that parents know what that looks like, and, you know, they're signing off saying that they believe their kid's ready to do things and all that stuff. So we'll have to have some plans in place and some things that make sense and the process of how it all works. But again, like I said earlier, we'd be silly not to allow that to happen for almost all of our sports if that's the law, if that's what everyone's doing. And again, at the end of the day, parents are going to have to trust coaches that they know what's best for their teams and that they want to keep kids safe. You know, it's no different than what we do all the time, right? We're trying to make really good decisions on how we can make our programs better. And I feel like coaches work really well with parents. We're all on the same page. We're all trying to do the same thing. You want your kid to be successful. We want them to be successful. So how can we put them in a position to do that? And if that means them playing up and moving up and doing that, then we should probably take advantage of that. If that means them staying with their team and helping their eighth grade team be better, so that they're ready to go once they get to the high school level, then that's what we need to have them do. So there will be some tough conversations, because those, I'm sure not everyone's going to agree all the time on that, right? Like, that's how that works. But I think, again, when you have good parents, you have a good community where everyone rallies behind each other and they all want what's best for their teams, hopefully those are all productive conversations that you're having of, you know, we're all in this together to try to figure out how to make our teams better, and we all want what's best for the kids here and our teams to be successful. So, it's when you're on the same page, it makes things a lot easier. So, like I said, we'll have a plan in place. We'll continue to communicate that out and go from there.
Randy, we thank you very much for all your time here today, and I'm sure this probably won't be the last time that we chat about this.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of conversations for a long time about what's right, what's not right, what's working, and what's not working. So, and that's the joy of it all, right? Like, here's the new opportunity, so let's see if we can make it work and see what makes sense. So I appreciate the conversation. Always fun to talk about it.
Hey, again, Randy, thank you for joining us. That was Randy Beeson of the Carroll Tigers. We'll step away, take a break. We got more Rewind coming up next year on KCIM.
From your first sunrise to the sunset of life, we are with you through life's journey. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. Visit socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
We are back with the CB Sports Network Rewind Show here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. Casey Miners, Jeff Blankman, Mason Nealon with you in studio. Again, we do want to thank Mackey Motors for bringing this show to you guys every Tuesday as we have got Jeff and Mason in studio with us as well. Time to talk a little softball. Don't have much time left here on the show this morning, but do want to thank Randy and Sean for coming in as well.
Yes.
And talking about, you know, something that I think is going to be turning a lot of heads coming up in the fall.
Yeah, I think for these first couple of years until, you know, everybody kind of figures out exactly how it's going to work, and they maybe tweak some things down at the, at the state level or whatever for the state lawmakers. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think, like Sean and Randy both said, I don't know if it's going to have as big of an impact.
As people think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see a ton of eighth graders being pulled up and stuff. And I like that. You know, you heard both ADs talk about, you know, you can't just bring up all the eighth graders and then what happens to your junior high program, you know, because if you kill your junior high program, like Chun said, if you kill your junior high program, what do you got feeding into your high school program?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, really interesting conversation with both of those. Both of you guys were down in Audubon last night for a pretty good softball game. The Wheelers and Spartans, Zaire, Elkhorn, Kimbleton, Audubon able to advance to the state softball tournament. They get the number one overall seed coming up on Monday. They'll take on Edgewood Colesburg at noon on the Farm Bureau Field there at Harlan Rogers Sports Complex there in Fort Dodge.
Yeah, and I will say this. It might be the first time I've ever called for, like, girls. It would be a regional final for the boys, sub-state. That lasted less than an hour.
Yeah.
that was a quick game last night, and the Spartans in that third inning just absolutely took control, and Riley pitched like Riley does. I remember asking Mason the question last night of, you know, what she was doing well, and he goes, well, she's just being Riley Miller, you know, and stuff. So you know what you're going to get when she's doing that. But, yeah, didn't really do much of anything wrong in that game last night. I think even Tom Peterson was having a hard time finding things. You know he will as a coach, but, finding things that they needed to improve on. So the one thing I think he mentioned was maybe still not always getting bunts down when you're looking to sacrifice somebody.
Yeah, especially on that one, obviously. I think we both know that one, you pop up a bunt in the air, and I kind of preluded to it a couple of seconds earlier and said, you know, you don't want to hit into a double play here. They put a bunt put a bunt in the air, catch it, throw to first, double play, ends the inning, which you're probably not happy with that. But, you know, you're the number one team. You just blew out your team going into the regional final, and now you head to the state tournament. So you're probably not too upset with that. I mean, you're probably just going to be like, well, it's something we'll work on in practice heading into the state tournament. But, yeah, now they get, you know, to try out the new double elimination bracket and see how that works. So I think you and Nick will have a pretty good time with that one.
Yeah, Nick Brinks is going to be up there. He does some work for Iowa Public Television, so he's going to be a part of the coverage for the state as a whole, so it'll be just easy to have Nick do those games. But I'm going to be up there and help him out with the broadcast. There might be a game or two where I maybe have to take over coverage of it because Nick's other responsibilities with the network that's going to be covering the tournament. So he may start a game and I may finish it,
yep.
Type of a thing. But it'll be fun. And then Mason, you'll be back here covering state baseball no matter what. So again, we'll be doing live updates every hour from every state tournament baseball game. If Coon Rapids Bear makes it, we won't be doing updates during those games because we will just live broadcast that game, and Mason will have the call there. I'm hoping that the schedule works out perfect enough that I can go do color commentating for softball and get through the post-game interviews and then just drive back down and still walk straight into the broadcast booth at Merchants Park and help Mason call the baseball games because that would be like a perfect week for me.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to allow you to do that. I might tell you to get stopped at the door. I might have him search you on the way into Merchants Park, but no, I think hopefully
I know enough gates I can sneak in.
Yeah, I think probably. I mean, it is our home field here in town. But I think that, you know, tonight should be a pretty fun game as well. You and I get to travel over to Valley and watch the Crusaders try and make their bid to the state tournament.
Yeah, and, you know, they've got a really good chance to get through, but they've got to go out and take care of business. They can't just show up. And I think that that group of kids knows that. I do want to give a quick shout out here to Kemper. I know their season came to an end on Saturday, but, you know, what a run that that they had this year in baseball and even in softball with them losing the other night. But, you know, what a season they put together this year, and what the future looks really, really good for Kemper baseball.
That'll wrap up the CB Sports Network Rewind Show for you here on this Tuesday. Check out a podcast of it in just moments.
Western Iowa's news and classic hit station is 1380 AM.